Welcome back to the Puma Podcast. I'm Tori.
I'm Puma.
And on this podcast, guys, we talk about a few things. We talk about Jesus, life, and everything in between. Guys, we are in our integrity series, and this is one of my favorite series, one that always convicts me. And last week we talked about Daniel and just how he, from the very beginning, made his resolve. He purposed his heart to not compromise, not to defile himself, because he loved his God Yahweh so much so. And in that chapter, he mentions that he also had three friends. And today's story is found in Daniel chapter 3.
Three friends. It is nice to have friends.
It is nice to have friends.
Especially friends of like mind.
Yes. So I'm going to share a little Chick-fil-A story. I was a Chick-fil-A employee for a few years. And God really showed me favor. I started when I was 16, and through the process of just working there, I became a team leader, then a manager, then a director, and really thrived there. I love Chick-fil-A, the food, but even the company.
The food is very, very good, except for Sundays. It's not so good on Sundays.
I know. I just, every time, hey, what are we going to eat after church? Oh, Chick-fil-A. And my heart jumps and then sinks just as fast. But yeah, so I was a Chick-fil-A manager, and I loved working there. And my brother, he went to college. He's 2 years older than me. He took a gap year and came back between his college career. I was like, hey, man, can you hook me up with a job? I'm like, sure. So we started my brother out, and he worked at Chick-fil-A also. And he also kind of moved over that year very fast, also became a manager. And, you know, as typical Tory fashion, I go to Mexico on a mission trip and just break my ankle, sprain it really severely.
For those that don't know, Tory was our emergency room child growing up, and he still is, even though he's not my responsibility.
Not a flex, but yeah, that's very true. I get injured way too often. But anyway, so I digress. I come back from Mexico, and my ankle is so busted up. I'm in crutches. I couldn't go to work for a couple months. And one of my responsibilities as one of the directors there was doing the RQA report, and that's the Restaurant Quality Assessment Report, where basically every week I like get a random food from Atlanta, Georgia, our headquarters at Chick-fil-A, and hey, test this product, and you kind of like test it and kind of, you know, put like a thermometer in it, make sure it's all up to code, that we are cooking it correctly. No one knows that but the manager at the time. So when I asked them to make me some food, they don't know what I'm doing it for. It keeps, you know, the Chick-fil-A, whether it be a corporation or franchise, you know, owner, you know, basically it helps them be people of integrity, right? So I come back 2 months later, and this is a corporation in a mall. We had a new boss when I came back. Every 2 years, I kind of have a 2 year journey where these operators will, before they can get their own standalone Chick-fil-A.
So it's kind of a training ground for operators. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Training store.
Yep. For them to own their own actual store standalone, they need to go through a training corporation, Chick-fil-A, not a franchise. It's kind of complicated, but basically that's the gist of it. So I come back, I have a new boss, and I look over the results of the RQ report. It hasn't been done in 2 months. Now that was my responsibility when I was there, but there were other managers who could have done it. But so I can talk to my new boss, like, hey, I'm Tori. Looks like we have an RQA report. What should I send to headquarters? And he goes, you know what, Tori? Just give us all perfects. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah. He's like, it's not a big deal. The food's fine. No one's been poisoned, right? You know, so give us all perfects. I'm like, I'm not going to do that. That's lying. And he looked at me, he's like, fine, give me the iPad. I'll do it. And he took it out of my hands and he gave us all reports, you know, all perfects on those reports. And so I remember thinking, wow, that's super not great. I mean, that's pretty scrupulous. And it gets worse. So I'm back for almost a week under this new boss who cuts corners, and he goes, and I was writing the checks for the employees. I was writing checks, and part of the corporation, at least back in my time when I worked there, was that if you worked over 5 hours, you would get a half hour paid break. That was corporate. It's different for franchises, but corporately at Chick-fil-A, that was the rule. And he goes, hey, Tori, you know, while you're doing these checks, just cut everyone's half hour paid break out. I'm like, what? He's like, well, you know, I'm new here, and, you know, it's just a half hour. It's not that much. It's not going to affect them that much. It'll make our cost production and our income look better if we just cut out everyone's half hour paid break this week. And I'm like, no, I can't do that. That would be a breach of integrity. I was like, I'm not going to do that. He goes, fine, you're not going to do that. And I'm not sure why, but because he could have done that. But he's like, then I'm going to fire you, Tori. And I kind of smiled because I've been there. I know how it goes. And I'm like, well, I need to fire a manager. You need to have a written report. You can't just fire, you can fire, you know, a team lead or an employee, but a manager needs to have a reason why. And I'm like, I know I've done nothing wrong. So I'm like, you can't actually fire me. He's like, you're right, but I can schedule you for 0 hours each week. So even though you're employed here, you just don't work here. And he's like, we'll talk tomorrow. Tell me what you think. And we'll take it from there. So I mean, guys, like that was such a long 24 hours. It was so difficult. And I'm like, well, you know what? I'm not going to do it. I'm going to do the right thing, right? Integrity, the God-honoring thing. And I'm not going to cheat my employees out of their half-hour paid break. So I guess I'm not working. So I tell my new boss, we'll call him Jimmy, right? So, hey, Jimmy, I'm not going to do this for you. Sorry. See you later. Give me 0 hours a week. Not a big deal. And I still have my key card and my key to the mall, even though it's now closed.
Well, even though the mall doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, the mall is no longer there. But so I'm totally fine with that. And then Jimmy, he goes, you know what, Tori? How about this? I'm not just going to, quote, fire you. I'm going to fire your brother. Yeah, the one that came here for his gap year, the one that's been working here to save up money for college. I'm going to fire him because of what your decision to not, you know, do what I tell you. And guys, that was a much different emotion. And you know, I think sometimes with integrity, it's one thing, okay, I'll take the hit. Okay, I'll do the God-honoring thing. I'll the one who will take the consequences. But then, am I really going to let my brother take the heat for that? And I just have the heat. How would he respond to that? I mean, if I were to do that, how would he react? Would he get offended? Would he get mad at me? Could I ruin my friendship with my brother because I'm choosing to do the right thing? And there is a conclusion to the story, you know, but honestly, that story kind of segues, I think, really well into today's story here in Daniel chapter 3. You know, and this story is not necessarily uncommon, but it really highlights what do you do with, you know, authority? And not just that, who is in our corner? Who are the people that we choose to run with, especially when it comes to honoring God? So let's dive into Daniel chapter 3. All right, Puma, Daniel chapter 3. You know, this is the infamous Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego story.
Yes, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Fun names that I have really never heard anyone name their children.
Yeah, well, we can't spell anymore, so that'd
well,
be just
can't spell,
nightmare.
Can't even speak. I mean, I have a hard time. but yeah, these three guys, and remember from Daniel chapter 1, they were with Daniel that came over from Judah when the southern kingdom was, starting to deport, and Nebuchadnezzar was starting to deport all these guys. So this is still early in their lives. They're probably young adults. I mean, they've gone through all the training and everything now, but Nebuchadnezzar is still the king, and he is making all kinds of decisions. And I remember last time you talked about how ruthless he was.
Yeah.
And even like in this chapter, he says he just is ruthless. He just kind of and as a completely sovereign king over his kingdom, what he says goes. He just makes a decision, and that's I think you had mentioned last time, you know, if Daniel. In Daniel chapter 1, you know, off with your head or Ashpenaz, I can't say the guy's name.
Ashpenaz.
Yeah, you know, if he was negligent in his duties, you know, off with your head was a literal thing.
Yes, yeah, not figure of speech.
We're not talking figures of speech. And so this is the kind of ruthless king Nebuchadnezzar was. And in Daniel chapter 3, you know, it begins that King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold 90 feet high, and, 9 feet wide, and set it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Hmm. Now, why is he making this big image, this big statue?
Yeah, Nebuchadnezzar was known for being not just ruthless, but very arrogant. I mean, you know, he's wanting to an image of himself, you know, so I get Babylon was the nation. They were the superpower of the world at the time. Nebuchadnezzar sounds like he wants a statue of himself. It sounds very hedonistic, very arrogant, but that's kind of like how he was.
But a lot of rulers, I mean, when you have sovereign power where what you say goes and you literally can say, hey, cut that guy's head off and then it happens, you tend to get super arrogant and proud. Mm-hmm. And what happens is you really see yourself as God. Maybe lowercase g, but as God. And yeah. The Bible is very, very clear that there's only one God, and he's not Nebuchadnezzar or any other ruler, for that matter, in our world and human history. Mm-hmm. So the chain of authority always starts with God and then is invested to leaders, or like in a country, invested to a king and then all the way down. And the problem is when kings forget that they are also subject to authority, that's when countries and rulers really get themselves into trouble.
Yeah. Well, and further on in the chapter, right, King Nebuchadnezzar, he doesn't just, you know, have this huge statue. He makes a decree. And not just a small, it's a production. He gets out the floats. He gets out all the instruments.
Everyone, grab your instruments. I can't even read all these instruments.
It's a huge list. It's crazy.
Yeah, get out your flutes and harps. Get out your washboard and your milk jug and your spoons and your violin and your saw. And yeah, get some drills out there, right. Some garbage pails. I mean, get it all. Get everything out there. You're going to make this big production noise, and it was to be not just a sign of his authority for all to pay homage to him as the ruler, but also as an opportunity for the whole nation to worship.
Yeah.
To worship Nebuchadnezzar / the gods of Babylon, who, in a sense, endorsed Nebuchadnezzar's seemingly small g godness.
Yeah, it's a statement of authority and power.
Yeah. Same authority and power. So basically, they set this statue up, and then they make a decree that people from all the nations and everybody there, that when you hear the sound of all these instruments going, that everybody is to fall down and worship the image of gold that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And so this is what happened. So they had the day, they had it all set up, and they blew the horns, and everybody in the plain there from all the Babylonians, as well as all the people from all the countries that had been there, all were supposed to bow down and worship. Now, what happened? What did he say, Tori, when if someone didn't bow down and pay homage to Nebuchadnezzar as the king, and then to worship the image they set up?
Right. Well, yeah, it's not just, this is a command. This command comes with a consequence if you don't obey. In this proclamation, they also say, and if you do not bow down, right? When you hear the sounds of the flutes, the lyres, all the different instruments, when you hear this, if you don't bow down, then you will be burned alive, thrown into a fiery furnace. I can't imagine, but that also would be a public, that's not a private thing. Oh, you didn't, because then all the nations gathered, right? This is a huge group of people. And if you don't, there's a consequence.
What's interesting is that they seem to already have this furnace ready to go.
Yeah, right.
Right. I don't know how furnaces were actually functioned there, but we know, in this account here in Scripture, that the furnace was big enough for at least four people to walk around in.
Yeah.
So it had to be some huge. I haven't really researched how they designed that, but this is not just. Something
it's not
in
a campfire.
My basement.
No, right. This is a massive furnace.
This is. Were they already anticipating people to not do it?
I don't know.
Or just a sign of strength. Hey,
right.
Hey, look at this.
Or just to make them afraid. We already have it ready. You better bow down.
Right. Which is a great way to wield authority, isn't it?
Yeah.
To create fear.
Yeah. It is powerful.
Yeah. Yeah, so they do this, and they blow everything. And
verse 12 is so cool.
Yeah, go ahead.
There are people complaining to Nebuchadnezzar, right? So there are some magistrates and different people that served under King Nebuchadnezzar. And so I'll go back to verse 9. They said to the king, Nebuchadnezzar, "May you live forever, king. Your majesty has issued a decree that everyone who hears, all the sounds, the flutes, the horns, the zither, the lyre, the pipe, and all kinds of music must fall down and worship the gold image you've set up. And whoever does not bow down will be thrown into a blazing furnace." Then they tattle. It's crazy. They go verse 12, but
there's some Jews.
Yes.
Some Jews. Interesting. Yeah, like specifically. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not we have some guys, but they ethnically call them.
Yeah.
Out.
Right. And there were dozens, if not hundreds, of nations represented, because Babylon took over literally the known world. It wasn't, they single out the Jews, but there are some Jews whom you have set over affairs, to kind of call them out a little bit, you have set over affairs of Babylon, and who are they? They're Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And then they insult them. They say, "And these men pay no attention to you, your majesty. They neither serve your gods nor worship the image you have set up. You know, and it's interesting because Daniel 2, 48 and 49, it says that Daniel actually helps promote these three friends. He actually helps them and gives them a little bit more prominence because Daniel was already high up in the ranks.
Yeah, and you see this theme throughout, you know, the book of Daniel as well, where you have other leaders that seem to be jealous or just to have it in for these guys.
Yeah.
You kind of see that over and over again. It's not like Nebuchadnezzar had it in for these guys.
Right. That's true.
I mean, it's not like because they were serving him. And it's not like they were poor servants. Mm-hmm. I mean, we know from Daniel chapter 1 that these guys had better aptitude and skills and were very, they were servants. So they were willing to serve Nebuchadnezzar, even though he was a pagan, anti-Yahweh. Ruler.
They passed the 3 years of tests and were interviewed by Nebuchadnezzar themselves.
Right.
And he mentions them by name. Daniel was the most impressive, but they also mentioned these three here. So yeah, Nebuchadnezzar definitely knew these guys.
So furious with rage, verse 13, Nebuchadnezzar summons them. And what I find fascinating, you know, that he says that you don't serve my gods or worship my image of gold I've set up. Now I'm going to give you a second chance. So we're going to blow all the horns and everything again.
Right.
And this time I want you to fall down and worship the image I made. Okay, guys, very good. Okay, can you do that for me this time?
And this is public. And this is like, these three guys are before the king. And again, everyone's bowing down. You hear all the, you know, I don't think it was a private affair. Because when you blow the instruments and make the music, everyone bows down again.
Right.
So they're right there. I mean, the shame, the public part of the story is incredible to me.
Yeah.
That's a lot of pressure.
Well, Nebuchadnezzar doesn't seem like a guy that gives second chances.
No.
Right? He's not a second chance guy. But the fact that he gives them a second chance is amazing to me. I mean, that right there says that they have demonstrated that they were men of integrity. And I use that word men of integrity because you don't want crooked people around you. You want people of integrity around you, correct, even if you're a crook.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
Crooked people want people of integrity around them.
Mm-hmm.
And so King Nebuchadnezzar, he might be evil, but he's not dumb.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So he gives him a second chance, but he says, dudes, listen to this. I'm serious, everyone's watching, all right?
Mm-hmm.
So this conversation might not be public, but everybody is watching. So you bow down this time. Otherwise, I'm going to immediately throw you into the fire first.
Right. Yeah. And Nebuchadnezzar can't look like a liar in front of all these people.
Right. Well, you know, what's interesting is, you know, they say, oh, Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you. If you throw us down in the fire furnace, that's great, but we are not going to bow down. And our God is able to save us. And if he does, great. If he doesn't, that's okay.
Yeah.
We are going to follow and serve our God and not bow down and worship.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
I love that. The integrity of these guys. We know. Like they had complete faith. God could. But in their integrity, they did not assume God's will. They know we could. But even if he doesn't, we're not going to compromise.
Not going to compromise.
That is incredible. I love that. That had to be so hard. These were very godly men.
Yeah. Well, that really ticked Nebuchadnezzar off.
Yeah.
It says he was furious. You know what? I think he was always on edge anyway, at least in some of the accounts here. He's always furious.
Yeah, management problems.
Really. And so it says he ordered the furnace heated 7 times hotter than usual.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not a rocket scientist, but fire is pretty hot.
Right. Yeah, typically burns
and
things.
I know that there are certain, you know, the different color flames and, you know, blue is super like hot, I guess. It's been a long time since, since school. I just like fire. I don't care what color it is. But I do know that, to get it 7 times, I mean, just think that through, like seven times hotter.
Yeah.
It says that even the guys that threw these guys into the furnace got burnt up as they got close to it.
Right.
That's how hot it was.
Yeah, and verse 20 says these guys were some of the strongest in his army.
Yeah.
I mean, these guys weren't like the peons, the weak soldiers. He picked the strongest men in his army to tie these guys up, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and throw them in the furnace. And they burned up.
Yeah, I mean, the king's command was so urgent and the furnace so hot that the flames of the fire killed the soldiers who took
That's
Shadrach,
crazy.
Meshach, and Abednego. and firmly tied, they fell into the blazing fire.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the rest of the story, you know, Nebuchadnezzar jumps up. He says, hey, didn't we throw three guys in there? Mm-hmm. There's four of them in, and one looks like the son of the gods. Yeah. And as he approached, he yelled in there, hey, I mean, obviously he's not getting close.
Right. So he's not what happened to the soldiers.
Yeah, so he's going to scream, hey, what's going on? You know, and he says, servants of the Most High God, you know, come out. And so they came out, and he saw the fire hadn't harmed their bodies. They didn't even have the stench of burning anything.
Didn't smell like smoke.
No. And Nebuchadnezzar says, praise be to the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and rescued his servants. They trusted in him and defied the king's command and were willing to give up their lives rather than serve or worship any god except their own god. What a statement or testimony to a pagan king.
Yeah.
Because these three were not willing to compromise their integrity.
Mm-hmm.
So just amazing to me. And he even makes a decree at the end of the chapter.
Yeah.
He says, All right, scrap my image. You got to worship the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And if you don't, I'm going to cut you into pieces and burn your house.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah.
So he's just a ruthless guy. Mm-hmm. But man, what a statement. Mm-hmm. You know, so what are some of the big ideas, you know, when it comes to integrity, and especially when it comes to compromising when an authority tells you to do something.
Right. When an authority tells you, you know, yeah, and the stakes are high, right? With Daniel in chapter one, right? He didn't know the outcome. I'm not going to eat the king's meat. I'm not going to have the wine, but he didn't know what the consequence was. Here, oh, there is a consequence, fellas. And this is not just Ashpenaz, the chief. This is the king himself, the one who is over you in authority. Yeah. Do people of integrity obey authority?
I mean, does the Bible tell us to obey our authorities? Or as a parent, children are told to obey, you know, their parents.
Right.
In Romans 13, it says that we are to submit to the governing authorities, that the governing authorities over us are instituted by God, which is interesting when Paul writes that, you know, probably Nero was the, you know, the one ruling the Roman Empire at the time, and he was just as ruthless as Nebuchadnezzar.
Yeah, evil man.
You know, so to say that we're to submit to the governing authorities. Mm-hmm. What's interesting, though, it doesn't say obey your governing authorities. Mm-hmm. So obeying and submitting are not the same.
Interesting, yeah.
You see, here Nebuchadnezzar tells them to do something and they disobey. Mm-hmm. But they submitted themselves to Nebuchadnezzar as God's authority over them at the time.
Right.
And so submitting meant throw us into the fiery furnace.
Yeah.
Which is crazy that your integrity, you know, to live upright and blameless doesn't always mean that you do what an authority tells you to do
right.
if it's compromising God, you know, because we spoke at the very beginning that integrity, the way we want to define it, is doing the God-honoring thing.
Right.
Regardless of the cost, or here are the consequences, the cost of your life, the consequences.
Yeah.
To do the God-honoring thing sometimes means disobeying the king who is doing the dishonoring, God-dishonoring thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these guys were more committed to honoring God than honoring their king. And yet at the same time, like you said, yeah, they did submit. They were willing. I mean, they probably have a choice, but they knew the consequences. And I think it's fascinating too that this is one of the few stories where we see a group of men do this together.
Yeah.
You know? And I wonder, what if it was just, you know, what if it was just Shadrach? I mean, and the other two guys like, I don't think so. But no, but the fact that they were all like-minded, these like-minded men who not only were captives, because they were Jews, they were, you know, foreigners, and they loved God together. They had faith, and I think, it was multiplied because they all had each other's back. They weren't standing alone. I mean, I think they probably would have, but the fact that they were together brought so much more confidence, I think, in doing the right thing.
Yeah, it goes back to what Proverbs says, that when you walk with the wise, you grow wise. When you walk with foolish people, you suffer.
Yeah.
And these, you know, again, some of the application here is, you know, who do we run with? Do we run with people that desire to have integrity and not willing to compromise? Because any of them could have said, hey, dude, you know what? We could lose our life. Why don't we just kind of like kind of half bow down here? We'll be bowing on the outside, but inside we're not compromising. We still believe in Yahweh.
Right.
I mean, you have a friend that says that to you? and asking you to compromise your integrity.
Yeah.
You know, but these three all seem to hold each other high. I mean, to run with people that are not willing to compromise the small things really is so, so important.
It does. It goes such a long way. Even going back to the Chick-fil-A story, right? I mean, there I was faced with, you know, my boss, Jimmy, and he threatened not just me, but my brother. And he's like, we'll meet again tomorrow. You come back with your answer. That was a different night for me, because even if I did the right thing, I'm putting someone I care about, my older brother who left college to work. I mean, a job. It's one thing for me who is not, doesn't have debt yet, but my brother was trying to work. And this was, I mean, it's hard to just mid-year get a new job. And he was a manager at that point. And I remember thinking and praying, God, I know what the right thing is. I know what integrity looks like, but I don't know how my brother's going to take that. That would be so soul crushing. And yet, just like you mentioned in Proverbs, you know, just like the, as iron sharpens iron. I remember going to my brother. I'm like, hey, man, this is the situation. I am so sorry. I made a vow to God, and I have to do the right thing, which means that I'm going to be let go, and you are too. And it was so cool, Puma. I mean, he's your son too. I remember he looked at me. And he's like, no, Jimmy is not going to fire me because I quit. And he was just so supportive. It was so cool because I remember, I mean, his response to me was one of the most, I guess, character shaping things in my life. My older brother was not just supportive, but he was proud of me for, I guess, letting him get fired because that was the right thing. And yeah, who you surround yourself with, the people that you choose to put in your circle, those who maybe lack integrity, well, that will affect you. But the people that are godly, who do the God-honoring thing, when you surround yourself with those kind of people, maybe you could stand up against a king and risk death because you know God's on your side. But you know what? You know your friends are too.
Yeah, God-honoring friends push you to honor God.
Yeah.
You know, God-honoring friends push you to be a person of integrity and blameless. Mm-hmm. And what an amazing thing to walk with that.
Yeah.
So what are some applicational questions, Tori, or some final thoughts here?
You know, I think a great application question we just hit on. I mean, for you in your life, do you surround yourself with people of integrity? Because not only is it hard, and we live in a very sinful culture, and we have some people in authority who do pressure us and will, you know, help us to make excuses to compromise and to the non-God-honoring thing. But if you have someone who has your back, you have a brother like I do, who's like, you know what? I am so proud of you that it's an honor for me to be let go because you are honoring God. If my brother did not react that way, I probably still would have done it, but that would have been incredibly hard. So do you have people of integrity in your circle? Do you surround, do you make the choice? Do you surround?
Do you look for people to honor God, even in the small things?
Exactly right. Yeah. Do you look for that?
Yeah. And especially in our world today where governing authorities are getting less and less godly.
Yeah.
I find it easier and easier to want to compromise my integrity in small things, you know, when it comes to, you know, our leaders and the decisions that are being made, the laws that are being passed, and, you know, to surround yourself with people that desire to do the God-honoring thing, regardless of the cost, especially when it comes to authorities today. That's another area I think it's really, really hard to uphold your integrity when an authority tells you to compromise, you know, God's truth or God's standard. And we need to be around others that are going to help us with that.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a great application question. And to really, and take a real honest look, do I seek those people out? You know, because as these three guys, I don't know if they knew each other beforehand, but they definitely knew each other after they were captives. and they were able to not just lose their job, but they were willing to risk their very own lives because they loved and trusted in their God. Iron sharpens iron. Let's look for people like that. Guys, if you have any questions or comments, please email us at thepumapodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you guys. I just appreciate your guys' following us on this journey and learning to be people who honor God, regardless of the cost, regardless of the consequences. We want to be people that love God and love people well. So we'll see you next week, Fridays at 10:10.
At 10:10. See you then.
Bye.
Bye-bye.